sexual immorality. See if you can work out a kind of negotiator. So he says, no, turn around and run. Leave it, because it's dangerous. It'll kill you, right, spiritually. And here's the thing he's saying. The Christian message is not just about spirit, it's about the resurrection of our body. Our bodies matter. Verse 19, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, and whom you have received from God? And you know how you can tell if you have the Spirit, is your deepest desire to love and serve Jesus. Right? Can you see he's your Lord and your Master? You are not your own, you were bought at a price. Jesus died and paid that huge price of his life to buy you back. And one day he'll redeem your body. How you behave physically matters. You're not just a bodiless spirit, you're a person, and you will be resurrected one day. So, honour God with your body. And notice, the whole context, right from verse 12, is about sexuality. This is not about whether you smoke or eat fatty bacon or your cholesterol's high or whatever. Okay? It's about how you behave sexually matters. It matters to God. All right. Now, that's all about... Let me give you the good news, okay? Here's the good news. Right. And I'll push through quickly, but I probably have your attention with this one. Here's the good news. Now for the matters you wrote about. It is good for a man not to marry. Here's what I think he's doing. They've sent him a letter and they've got a whole lot of questions. In fact, the second half of his response is answering all their questions. But he puts the sexuality one there after chapter 7. So he's given the problems with sexuality and God's answer in chapter 7. If you've got your Bible, have a look. See verses 12 and 13. There's these little phrases that the Corinthians were saying. Everything is permissible for me. And Paul says, no, but not everything's beneficial. Everything is permissible for me, but I'll be not master. Okay, so they were little slogans. Now, I think chapter 7, verse 1 is a slogan that they were saying. You see what it says? Now for the matters you wrote about, and then they were saying, it is good for a man not to marry. And what it literally actually says is, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Okay? And remember I said that the Corinthians, they either go kind of out of control, do whatever you want sexually, your body doesn't matter, or shut down any kind of enjoyable thing with your body, asceticism. I think this is asceticism, kind of this idea of deny yourself popping up. And Paul says, no. Listen to what God says. Listen to God's plan. Verse 2. It's not good for a man not to marry. That's not the way to think. He says, but since there's so much immorality, or the old words for it were fornication, right? But since there's so much wrong being, so much sexual sin and so on, but since there is so much immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. Now, here's the thing. The reason to be married is to be sexually pure and to please God in how you live. The reason to be married here is so you won't commit sexual immorality, so you won't dishonour God in the area of your sexuality. You might think, well, that doesn't sound very romantic. Well, sounds right to me. But what I mean is, it's actually caring for and loving each other and meeting each other's needs and helping one another. Notice I said this is about Christians, people who want to love and serve Jesus. It's helping the person you're married to walk with Jesus. Okay? And how does that mean? Well, he goes on. Verse 3, the husband should fulfil his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The word there, duty, it can be like you pay a debt, or you do your duty for your partner. And here's something else to notice. There's still people who say, oh, Paul, you know, he was a woman hater, he was a misogynist. Don't you believe it. You look at verse 3, and right through this whole chapter, what the woman needs and what the man needs are interchangeable. What I mean is, he gives just as much honour and care for the woman's sexual needs as for the man's. The woman has just as much authority sexually in the relationship as the man. The man and the woman are completely equal partners. There are some religions, I'm going to say something now that will be a little bit shocking, but here we go. There are some religions still practising in our world today, in Africa and different parts of that, where a woman's clitoris is removed surgically or with a knife or whatever. And why has that happened? So she can't enjoy sex. Right? Because sex is for a man and it's to be endured for a woman. That is not what Paul says. Right? The woman's to enjoy sex just as much as a husband, and a husband should look after his wife, and the wife should look after her husband. Okay? So, Paul's aware that women have sexual desires. Now, how does this work? Here's my little theory. Sex within marriage is the best sex you can get. Now, I know God says it. Here's my reason, I think, why, and that is a woman's ability to enjoy sex, from everything I understand, is directly related to her ability, to how much she feels loved and secure in the relationship. So the more she feels loved, the more she feels secure, the more she feels cared for, the more she's able to give herself physically to her partner, to her husband. And when she does feel loved, secured, special, and so on, look out, okay? All right? Now, I didn't know how else to say. Okay, yeah, you know what I mean. And for a man, a man's enjoyment of sex is directly related to how much the woman, his wife, is enjoying sex. Right? Sex without her enjoying it is like the prostitution thing. He says, it's nothing. Right? But if she gives herself to you and loves it and wow, right? That's why sex within marriage is sensational as God's planned it. And it gets even better. Here we go, verse 4. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband in the same way. And notice, interchangeable, the same way. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. What he literally says is, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband. And the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife. Okay? It's not some Nazi thing, you know, I have authority over you. They're saying you use your body to look after the other person. You don't own your own body, your partner does, might be the way to put it. So, blokes, let me tell you something. If you think, oh, this is great, I'll just order her and, you know, just kind of immediately I click my fingers and there's... It don't work that way. And if you think it does, you need to hit in the head with a fence post, all right? In fact, come on up and I'll give you a hit. Before you touch her body, you must touch her heart and her emotions. Okay? And some men are very lazy, and they shouldn't be lazy. You touch her heart and her emotions, you'll be rewarded. Okay. Now, what does this mean? Well, if your body is to serve your partner, I'll stick my neck out again. Here we go. I think it means if you're married, it's not a bad thing to take a little bit of care to actually try and look just a little bit attractive for your partner. Okay? So, blokes, if you're married, it would be good if you didn't always look like a homeless guy. Okay? It'd be good if you didn't always have 3 days' growth and smell like a gorilla. The trachydacs and a belly and all that kind of thing, and you need to just take a little bit of care in how you look. Am I sticking my neck out? Yes, I am, but I think that's just... And here's the thing, we'll just keep going here, righto, here we go, out onto the minefield. I've known Christian women who've got married and then said, well, all that stuff about being attractive, that's not Christian and I'm not going to worry about it. So they walk around looking like a female homeless guy. And it just isn't... Well, I'm just saying that they do that. And I've got to say, I've seen really hairy legs and the hair squashed under stockings, and it's not a good look, okay? Yeah, okay. Well, now I'm not saying you've got to look like Elle Macpherson, okay? I'm not saying that. But I'm saying to make a bit of an effort would be appreciated. If you're going to find out what she likes and wants, and find out what he likes and wants, and care for them, okay? Love them. Love them. Now, here's the thing. It gets even better. When you're actually married, people talk about, oh, the honeymoon, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, all that stuff. The honeymoon's a joke, Okay? Nothing ever happens on a honeymoon, really. You're just getting started. Right? You know, it's fun learning and stuff, but you're just getting started. What's that mean? It means you have years and years and years to get to know one another. And know in the biblical sense. And what each other likes. And to relax with one another and to be able to give yourself to one another. God's a good God. Trust him. It gets better. Now Paul says, verse 6, I say this as a concession, not as a command. In other words, marry and have sex and so on. I wish that all men were as I am, but each man has his own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. What he means, I think, is that if you're able to be single and sexual desire and so on isn't a problem, then there's lots of things that a single person can do. Like a single person travels light and quickly, and you can serve God in ways that a married person can't. Single person, I'm going to travel there, you walk out, you get in the car and you go. Married couple with a whole bunch of kids, takes you 2 hours to go and get the milk from the shop, right? Okay. And a married man, you see verses 32 to 35, about a married man is concerned about, sorry, an unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs and how to please the Lord, but a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world. A married man learns happy wife, happy life. That's kind of how it works, and the reverse is true as well. But Paul's saying it's not a matter of godliness. Some of us have the gift of being able to stay single, and that's great. Others of us will wish to marry. Now, there's about a million questions that are going to come from all of this, or could. That is, if you're single and you want to marry, well, it's important to work out, you know, following Jesus, what are you looking for in a marriage partner? What is important and what is not? If you're single and you want to get married, who are you going to go out with? Well, wait a minute, is going out... I don't even know if that's what you... I'm so out of touch, I'm nearly 50. I don't know, even know if that's what you call it anymore, okay? But if you're going to go out, who are you going to go out with? And, wait a minute, is going out a biblical category? I don't think so. So what are you going to... And also, in the Bible, in terms of sex, there are two speeds. You ready? There's on and there's off. And you're married. Whoa, go, whoa, whoa, fantastic. Or you're not. And the thing about going out is you need to be absolutely pure in how you treat the person that you're kind of courting or going out with or whatever. Why? Because they're going to be someone's husband or wife one day. And you should treat them the way you would want your potential husband or wife to be treated. Yeah, okay. All right. And then if you're going to get married, how old should you be when you get married? And so on. If you're single and there's no one on the horizon, how do you keep yourself pure? There's questions about that. Then there's another question. If you're married already, are you looking after your partner sexually? Are you meeting your partner's sexual needs? Are you helping to keep them pure and honouring Jesus with their body? Are you reporting for duty regularly and enjoying it? Okay. There's also hard questions too about... in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul talks through a whole list of different stages in life and so on. He talks to divorced people as well and so on. Now let me just take a risk here. There's two very different views of sexuality. One is to say God's view is that this is something so special that it should be intimate and private and used for husband and wife to know one another. The other, our world says it's cheap and it's tacky and do whatever you want, it has no value and so on. Who are you going to believe? I want to actually read you something from a non-Christian feminist writer, Naomi Wolf. Now, as far as I know, Naomi Wolf is not a Christian, okay? But she's understood something about it. You listen to this and see if you can get the two such different views about sexuality. This is in an article you can actually find on the web called The Porn Myth. And Naomi, her thesis is that constant access to pornography doesn't turn men into kind of raving, slobbering animals, you know, that I think about sex all the time. It actually deadens them to real live women. You actually don't think about, you don't think about real live women sexually, you just end up a slave of pornography. Listen to what she says. The ubiquity of sexual images does not free eros, right, sex, it dilutes it. Other cultures know this. I'm not advocating a return to the days of hiding female sexuality, but I am noticing, noting that the power and the charge of sex are maintained when there is some sacredness to it, when it is not on tap all the time. In many more traditional cultures, it is not prudery that leads them to discourage men from looking at pornography. It is rather because these cultures understand male sexuality and what it takes to keep men and women turned on to one another over time, to help men in particular to, as the Old Testament puts it, rejoice in the wife of thy youth, let her breasts satisfy thee at all times. These cultures urge men not to look at porn because they know that a powerful erotic bond between parents is the key element of a strong family. And feminists have misunderstood many of these prohibitions. I will never forget a visit I made to Ilana, an old friend who had become an Orthodox Jew in Jerusalem. So she following Old Testament teachings. When I saw her again, she had abandoned her jeans and T-shirt for long skirts and a headscarf. I could not get over it. Ilana has waist-length, wild, curly, golden blonde hair. "Can't I even see your hair?" I asked, trying to find my old friend in there. "No," she demurred quietly. "Only my husband," she said with a calm, sexual confidence. "Only my husband ever gets to see my hair." When she showed me her little house in a settlement on a hill, and I saw the bedroom draped in Middle Eastern embroideries that she shares only with her husband, the kids are not allowed, the sexual intensity in the air was archaic, overwhelming. It was private. It was a feeling of erotic intensity deeper than any I've ever picked up between secular couples in the liberated West. And I thought, our husbands see naked women all day, in Times Square, if not on the internet. Her husband never even sees another woman's hair. She must feel, I thought, so hot. Compare the steaminess with a conversation I had at Northwestern University after I had talked about the effect of porn on relationships. "Why have sex right away?" a boy with tasseled hair and Bambi eyes was explaining. "Well, things are always a little tense and uncomfortable when you just start seeing someone," he said. "I prefer to have sex right away to just get it over with. You know it's going to happen anyway, and it gets rid of the tension." "Isn't the tension kind of fun?" I asked. "Doesn't that also get rid of the mystery?" "Mystery?" He looked at me blankly, and then without hesitating he replied, "I don't know what you're talking about. Sex has no mystery." Do you see the two different views? And God says, a man and a woman commit to one another for life, and they know each other in a way that no one else does. God knows what is best for us. We have to learn to trust him in how we live. Now, Lionel, what are we going to do? Okay. I can't imagine there'd be any questions after that, but like just in case. Now, here's the thing. You may have a friend who would like to ask a question, so it's quite of yourself that my friend would. So I'll give you a moment, and we'll see if there's any questions. Anyone got any questions or comments? The thing is, ask anything you want, as long as I can say I don't know, then we're fine. James. Yeah, that's a good question. Why does God allow polygamy in the Old Testament, allow Abraham and David and others to have multiple wives in the New Testament, to be clear that you should only have one. Okay, best answer I can give, I think. I don't think God ever encourages it, but he does allow it in those societies. The ideal in Genesis is one man, one woman for life. And the Old Testament doesn't teach against it, but it does show the consequences. And I can't think of anyone that had more than one wife and had a happy life because of it. So the consequences are division, and, you know, like Jacob has Rachel and Leah and the other girls, I can't remember, there's two others, and they're always fighting with each other and bribing each other with a bunch of flowers for who gets dad tonight and different things, and it doesn't make for happy life at all. And Solomon marries many foreign wives and they lead his heart away. So when you come to the New Testament, as far as I'm New Testament, to be involved in Christian leadership, you certainly can only have one wife. And that's moving back to the ideal. Because marriage is actually a picture of the way that Jesus relates to his people in that love and commitment.
I'll ask a question now.
Lionel.
You said that if anyone was wanting help with putting pornography to bed, to come and talk to you afterwards.
Yep.
The problem is anyone there to come and talk to you afterwards, everyone will
kind of... Yeah, it's going to be a lonely supper time for me, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, can I tell you now? All right. Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. What I mean is this, if what you do leads you to, in the context of lust, if what you see causes you to sin, stop looking at it. If what you do, and how interesting, wonder if Jesus had the internet in mind with the mouse and your hand, right? Chop it off. In other words, you work out, one of the key things to work out is, if you want to follow Jesus and you want to walk away from this, there will be particular things or times or places that will lead you to sin. And you'll have the struggle of, you ask the question, you get it, Lionel, good Lionel and bad Lionel, okay? Here we go. Good Lionel wants to follow Jesus and so on, but there'll be times when Lionel's feeling weak or... emotionally flat or worn out, and there'll be the great temptation to do whatever it is. Okay. Now, I'm an ordinary bloke, and I'm kind of wired up there, and so I've worked out there are certain things that I must not do. So I worked out one of the things I used to love to do was to go to the video shop and wander around, and I'd pick out a movie and come home and watch it. But I worked out that I'd be there, and there's all sorts of garbage in the video shop that would fill my head with stuff that I think about for the rest of the week. So how do you stop that? Well, I haven't walked in a video shop in January. It will be 5 years. And it's slightly embarrassing with me sitting outside on the mobile phone and Kathy walks in and she rings me and says, have you seen this? Yeah, have you seen this? Nah. And then kind of, so she's a long-suffering, but it means I don't even think about that stuff anymore. I put covenant eyes on the internet. What that does is it sends a report of anything that's kind of a bit shonky that you visited. It sends it to Kathy and to Tony Willis, two very scary people. Okay, there's no more. In fact, all my internet goes through the Sydney Diocesan website, and that's really sensitive. I dialed in. I wanted to find a little radio one day. I've dialed in Dick Smith. And anyway, you can fill in the gap, but you just can't. So set it up so you are not tempted to remove it, okay? And then the more you starve the good tiger and the bad tiger inside you, the more you starve that, the stronger you'll get. And then fill your mind... Philippians chapter 4 says, fill your mind with whatever is pure and noble and so on. And fill your mind with positive things. But don't feed lust. It'll eat you if you do. And it's a poison and it's addictive and it's cumulative. And it costs to beat it. If going to the beach is a problem, stop going to the beach. Uh-huh. Or go at 6 a.m. with the sun come up and run like I do. That's not, you know, anyway, that's right. Any other, yes?
Yep.
Ah, okay. All right. That's a very good question. Yep. Let me see if I can get... it's a very good question. The assumption is, usually spoken, that... so I've said pornography is usually a male problem. The assumption is that men have much stronger sex drives than women. Is there anything in the Bible that says that? And what would you say then to a woman who struggles with sexual desire? Okay. I think pornography is much more likely to be a man's problem because it seems like God's wired us up to be much more visual, okay, and much more quickly aroused. Men are shallow and kind of, you know, like, whoa, we're kind of... but it's interesting, in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul assumes that there is male sexual desire and female sexual desire, and he treats them both exactly equally. Okay? He's not a misogynist. As sex is not for men, not to be enjoyed for men and endured for women. Both parties need to look after their partners. Okay? Okay, I've stuck my neck out two or three times. Let me do it tonight. I suspect men fantasise about a woman and what she looks like and using her and so on. I think girls sometimes fantasise about the ultimate relationship. So teenage boys you'll find with a Playboy or whatever. You don't find teenage girls with Playboy. What do you find them with? Mills and Boone. Or all those... What's the latest? No one's going to say a name now. Is it Sweet Valley High? You know? And what's the guy with the long hair and the... Fabio? Okay?
Yes, that's right. I'll meet him and he'll be wonderful.
And I suspect that that may be... It's, so there's a much more level of relationship and intimacy... in pornography, blokes, no man cares where she's from, what her name is, it's just what she looks like, right? What is it that girls long for? It's the intimacy and the care and the commitment. Someone can tell me I'm wrong. I'm happy to be told I'm wrong. And what that says a lot for blokes, if you really want to connect with a lady, that's what she's looking for. Okay? Just the problem is that so often us blokes are lazy. Lazy. Want to comment back on that one? No? Okay. All right. But in terms of sexual desire, Paul says, no, men and women, they're treated exactly equally. So don't let anyone tell you that Paul's a misogynist. He's not. Okay, Sam. Sex, righto. Yes, I didn't. Yes, that's right. Glad you correct that. I didn't say sex is sin. Sex is a good gift from God, but God tells us how and where we can enjoy it. Yes, sex outside marriage is wrong. Where do you draw the line? So, with someone that you're kind of going out with, is kissing a sin? Is all that kind of thing? And well, okay. 1 Timothy chapter 5 verse 2. Paul says to Timothy, treat older men, and this is in the context of, within a church, you treat one another like you're a big family. So he says there, treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Treat her, treat him, or treat her like she's your sister. When I told my youth group at Mount Druitt that, they said, what, pull her hair and fight with her? No, I said, no, with absolute purity. Like I said, there's two speeds. It's on and it's wonderful and whatever goes, whatever you want it, fine. Or don't touch her. Don't touch him. Okay? I don't think it's the same as saying there's no affection, because you can be affectionate to your sister or your brother. The difference is don't sexually arouse them. That's the difference. So you can hold hands or all that kind of thing. You know, I suppose, yeah. But the point is, as soon as you start sexually arousing someone, that you're not being loving to them. Because once you're sexually aroused, you stop thinking with this. Got it? And the idea is you need to get to know one another and be able to think with this. Anyway, that's... You can fill in the gaps.